Begin after six taps. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Hello, what the Flicksters, what the Flickinistas. JJ, I'll let you fill in the rest. And welcome to this long-awaited year in review slash Oscar special. I've got the absolutely thankless task of playing host this year. Name's Lady P, no relation to Master P. And joining me today is European art house sensation that no one's ever heard of, Mr. Tim Braden.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the show, Tim.
Glad to be back. Glad to be talking about something that's not Disney movies.
Yeah. Actually, maybe one.
Maybe one.
We'll see. And making his FlixWise debut is teenage acting phenom who earns awards by playing 40-year-olds, Mr. J.J. Birsch.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, J.J.
What up?
In addition to being awards, movies, cliches. Both of today's guests also happen to be fellow grad students here at UW-Madison.
Yes, you look like a badger.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And on today's show, we're going contemporary for a change, although we're still kind of a little late to the party. We're doing a 2018 year review slash Oscar preview show, and we're going to talk about our favorite performances, scenes, moments from last year. And we'll discuss whether our favorites were the Academy favorites, and we'll see if it includes the favorite.
It does.
Yeah,
spoiler.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I think that is not hugely shocking.
Sure.
The favorite will be on at least a list or two.
Sure. All right. Well, okay, so JJ, I'm going to start with you, because you are the special events editor for our online magazine Playback, and you do Playback Awards.
I do.
And so presumably you volunteered for this task.
Yeah, my own creation. I was the first person to decide to have year-end movie awards.
Okay, so...
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a joy, at least amongst the film set in our department.
We actually got, last year, it was almost 50-50
nice.
MCS film.
Nice. I won't bother to explain what the difference between MCS, Media and Cultural Studies, and film is at this point, but there's a difference, just trust. And then...
it's a difference that no one outside of Madison, Wisconsin cares about.
Exactly. Tell me...
Besides the job market.
Oh, God. okay, well, so tell me why you decided to start this feature and what you think the pleasures are of sort of doing these year-end summations.
I mean, I think I've always wanted to do something like it. I really like doing simple math and tallying things up. So it satisfies that part of my personality.
Sure.
But also, I mean, I'll say a tiny bit about the differences is just the film program and the MCS program are two sort of media studies grad programs have pretty different predilections for like what kind of movies they're into. And I was curious, surrounded by all these smart people, what are the differences? Like, what do the film people care for? What do the other grad students care for? And then I think even more interestingly, like, what brings us together? And then, of course, like this podcast, what distinguishes us from other awards bodies?
Sure.
What do we bring attention to that maybe the Oscars or the SAGs or definitely the Golden Globes do not pay attention to?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Sure.
And Tim, how do you feel about these year in review lists?
I mean, I'm an inveterate ranker. I'm a list maker. I think it's just one of those things that if you have a certain kind of, I mean, I think JJ put it well, like it's simple math. And I think if you have a kind of like desire to quantify things, it's a fun mental exercise. I don't think it's real. Like I think that, I think a horse race of movies is kind of like arbitrary and silly, but it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's, I think what makes it worth doing it is just like, it gives you a chance to reflect and to say the things you like about the movies you really liked over the year.
Right. But what is it? This is a very strange compulsion to like weigh the merits of one movie over another and determine whether or not it is better than the other. One movie is better than another. And I do this all the time, obviously, with this podcast. But maybe this is taking us on a tangent that will lead us further astray from the whole Oscars ballot thing, which we do eventually need to get to. But why do we do this? It's like sickness, I think. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, like we're certainly, I think we're grad students in film, so we are sick.
Sure.
I think we can all agree that there's something
mm-hmm.
broken in the way we engage with media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's for me at least, it's just part of the overall compulsion to like perform my tastes in public and like demonstrate that I'm more sophisticated and cool than other people.
Thank you for being honest. Yeah.
Well, I also feel like we do this everywhere, and even in places that have objective winners and losers, we do this because I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm a huge basketball fan, and like you have someone who wins at the end of the season, and yet almost instantly the conversation moves beyond that to, is this person better than this other person from that era?
Right.
And you don't have, I mean, you have more statistics there. I mean, I guess we have like average shot length and other things that we could use to measure.
I don't think anyone uses average. Yeah. Average shot length is not like free throws.
Yeah. Scored.
No, that's why Star is Born is so good. It's got such a low ASL. Really great. But no, even there, it instantly moves to another realm where it's like pitting these things against each other. We love competition.
Yeah.
And I know I personally very much love competition.
I think that's, yeah, that's right. And I like to deny that part of my personality, but I think it's absolutely true. Like, yeah. My favorite is the best, and here's why.
Exactly.
Let me justify it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so with that, why don't we just quickly run off our lists of the best films from 2018? Well, before we do that, actually, let's just talk about just what our overall impression is of the films of 2018. Did you come away feeling like it was a good year for cinema? Are you feeling like it was a middling year, bad, or just stray observations? What are things you notice, trends, etc.?
So I have been a film critic since 2005. That was the first year that I tried to see like basically everything that came out. And in the 13 years that I've been doing this, I think 2018 was the best year for films.
Wow.
I had so many films that I just completely loved. I'll go into that, of course, when we talk about individual films. But no, I was just constantly bowled over the whole year. Like, summer movies were great this year. We actually had some good Oscar bait this year. We had some good weird art films. We had good cult films. I was super impressed. Which, not to leap ahead in the conversation, I think it's incredibly ironic that my favorite year for movies in recent memory, led to easily my least favorite Oscar slate in a long time.
Yeah, yeah. JJ?
I think we had very different years.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like it was much like any other year where there were good films, there were bad films, more bad than good. And there felt like there were so many just dead stretches for me personally. I mean, I think one of the things that's so weird about talking about like the year in cinema is so much of it has to do with your location.
Sure.
And we are in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the second.
Tragically, I think we're in the middle of somewhere by Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But even then, we're in the second largest city, and my hometown in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is often known for being smaller than a different city, Chicago. And that city didn't even have an art house for a while this year because it was under renovations. So, I mean, it's always strange because it feels like I see a bunch of good movies at one point in time when either the Wisconsin Film Festival happens here in Madison or the Milwaukee Film Festival happens in Milwaukee. And then the rest of the year, I'm kind of just waiting for another like drop of all those things. And the final drop is often Oscar season, but it feels like Oscar season gets longer and longer and longer every single year. And especially this year with A Star Is Born coming out very early, too early perhaps, and then not really ending. I mean, I still haven't seen Cold War. It hasn't played in this state. It will start.
It's coming on Friday.
I know it's coming to here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I knew it was coming to Milwaukee on Friday.
It's coming here on Friday.
But yeah, it hadn't played here yet. And that, if I had to guess, would be the 9th Best Picture nominee if we went to 9 based on their some of their other choices. So yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like I spend so much time waiting for the movies to come out. And then when they don't hit me the way I want them to, which happened with a lot of the big ones this year, it just feels even more desolate.
Sure, yeah.
And that, I think that certainly happens. Like when you have a high level of anticipation and it doesn't pay off, like it makes things seem worse. And I guess that's why I liked the year so much. So many things I didn't expect to like, I liked a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe the story of this year for me is like the things that surprised me are the things that I liked, and the things that I was really, really supposed to like, I didn't care for. But I don't know that that's a new trend. I feel like that's kind of the story of my cinephilia. I don't know. Like so much of it has to do with your expectations. because, well, we'll get into it, but
interesting.
I know that opinions are mixed on a number of the Best Picture nominees, and I think our top eight lists are going to be pretty diverse, I think. Perhaps not in terms of ethnic makeup, but maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I think different things spoke to us for different reasons. But I feel like, okay, I'm going to stop dancing around this. Let's just hit me. Let's do our top eight. Because we're doing top eight instead of top 10 because the Oscars, saw fit to nominate only eight. So
I'm sorry, widows.
Yeah.
You just missed out.
Bummer. All right.
It's not the Oscars.
rejected pretty hardcore.
Advertised
on that.
Into
yeah.
oblivion.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay. Well, so in lieu of doing like a dramatic top eight going around and talking about each one, let's just do a quick read off.
Just read the titles.
Yeah,
from
read
eight
them
to
off.
One or one to eight?
I'm going to leave that up to you, depending on which one is more dramatic.
8 to 1, baby.
Okay, let's do it. JJ, you want to kick us off?
Of course. Okay. My number 8 film was The Day After, directed by Hong Sang-soo. My number 7 film was A Star Is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper. Mm-hmm. Number 6 was Let the Sunshine In, directed by Claire Denis. 5 was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, directed by a bunch of white men, I think.
One of them is not white.
That is good to hear. I didn't want to look into it because I didn't want to know. That's great. My 4th film was Zama, directed by Lucretia Martel. 3 was Minding the Gap, directed by Bing Liu. 2 was The Favorite, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. And my number 1 film of the year was If Beale Street Could Talk, directed by Barry Jenkins.
Okay, excellent list.
So there actually is going to be a little bit of overlap between our lists, which...
I liked a cartoon this year.
I was not necessarily expecting. I liked the same cartoon, but...
The Favorite we're talking about.
Of course, which is actually my number 8 is The Favorite, Yorgos Lanthimos. My number 7 is You Were Never Really Here, directed by Lynn Ramsey. My number 6 is Annihilation, directed by Alex Garland. My number 5 is Night is Short, Walk On Girl. That's an anime film by Masaki Yuasa. My number 4 is Mission Impossible Fallout, directed by Christopher McQuarrie.
That was my 9.
All right. My number 3 is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse by the same cluster of not exclusively white men.
Thank God.
My number 2 is Zama by Lucretia Martel. And my number 1 is Mandy by Panos Cosmatos.
Wow. Okay. Both excellent lists.
Throwing up the rock sign right now.
Beautiful. All right. Mine, number 8, Star is Born, directed by B. Coops. Yeah. Number 7, you're going to hate me, Deadpool 2.
I love that you liked it enough to put it on your top 10, even though I suspect that means you only saw like 14 movies.
Possibly, yeah, yeah. I put it ahead of Zama, mostly, but I actually think Zama's the better movie.
Okay.
You know how it goes? Like,
sure.
I'm like throwing things out there.
I don't know what you're saying at all, but I trust that you have something in your head that makes sense.
Not really. I don't know. Number 6, Support the Girls, Bajowski. Number 5, Roma, Coron. We're going to go at
that
it.
That would have been
still
my number
10. Thinking about
Deadpool 2.
Did you like how he thought he was in a movie? Like he knew he was in a movie the whole
that
time?
That was funny. Yeah. I regret everything. Never mind. Number 4, The Green Fog. Madden.
That was my actual number 2, but I decided not to put experimental films in my top.
Okay,
I really felt like you were going to say Green Book.
Oh,
after the Deadpool 2 thing, anything.
Anything's possible.
Anything's available.
I feel maybe I'll offer an explanation, but maybe not. Maybe I'll just leave that
I'd say
there.
You just leave it.
Yep, okay.
Deadpool 2
yep.
might drop.
Number 3, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Number 2, First Reformed. And number 1, The Other Side of the Wind. Of course. Course.
The 2018 film.
I was disqualifying that one. Yeah. So two of the films on your list would have been on mine, except I had stricter rules that.
Yeah. That's,
I'm
that's
also
fair.
Sort of hung up on Deadpool.
Wait, did we have? Do we have no overlap? I'm trying to see.
It's possible.
I'm trying to think. No, Star is Born. We have.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Course.
And then
Bradley
Tim
united
Roma?
Us.
Roma would have been my number 10 by this list. It was, again, I took some things off my list that you did not.
Okay,
so
yeah.
We can say morally we would have overlapped.
Okay, all right.
Just not in real life.
Fair enough. Okay, all right. Well, yeah, I'm Deadpool 2.
It's fun.
It's not a great piece
I had
of cinema,
a good time
but
watching
like,
it.
Yeah, I think, we were
it
talking earlier about.
Handily better than Deadpool 1.
Sure. But I also think we were talking earlier about expectations, and I went into that with no expectations whatsoever. Like expectations in the toilet. And yep. I came out with a movie that like was like unexpectedly very also, queer.
Do so. Correct me if I'm wrong. You were like super jacked up on painkillers.
Yeah, there was that too. Yeah. Okay. So caveats galore.
That
so,
explains it.
Yeah. How do our lists compare with the Oscar top eight?
I have two overlapping
two
films,
overlaps.
I believe.
I have one. Okay. All right. So we've kind of been dancing around our opinions about the Oscars. I mean, we've talked about how we enjoy a good list. Mm-hmm. And this is a perennial favorite list of many people. The best Oscar nominations or the best picture nominations. What kind of barometer do you think this, like, how, what, like, what is this telling us?
Why?
I think that there exists a theoretically cohesive group of humans that could say that both Roma and The Favorite, but also Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book are among the best films of the year.
Sure.
Is just fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. Like, so
I want to know if any individual voter put both Roma and Bohemian Rhapsody on their list. Like, that seems very impossible to me.
Yeah.
Or Green Book and Klansman and Panther.
Actually, like, I can easily see
Green
someone
Book
having...
Well, Green Book and Klansman, for sure.
I was going to say Green Book we'll and Panther, for sure.
No. Black Klansman.
Okay.
Green Book film.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I asked you this earlier, like, sort of taking... taking your temperature of the year, what does this list kind of indicate to you about where, not where we're at, but like what does this say about what the industry thinks about their output? I mean, we have just a lot of different kinds of movies here. I guess well, let me just list them off really quickly. A Star Is Born, Black Klansman, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, and Vice.
I have no idea what this list is saying because it seems full of contradictions, like you guys were saying. I mean, especially because, I mean, I think it feels like a bit of a rewind in terms of two years ago, Moonlight won Best Picture,
sure. Yeah.
A very small film. That dealt with issues that are normally not covered with that sort of nuance in any Oscar films.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, it feels like it's not a rewind. There are some pretty forward-looking things like Roma, and I mean, they've recognized that superhero movies exist at this point. A Star Is Born is nominated for Best Picture, but feels like it's lost its steam, and that's probably the biggest of any of the rewinds in here, just in terms of its subject matter.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a tale as old as the Oscars themselves.
It is, I believe, the second film titled A Star Is Born to be nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I double-check me on that. I might be wrong.
That has to be right. But then, there are other backwards things. Like, if Moonlight was supposed to signal a younger Academy that was more forward-thinking, then the presence of not only films that are problematic in sort of their subject matter, like Green Book, or their relation to real-world people that are portrayed in the film, but also films like Bohemian Rhapsody, which are directed by... for professional sake, just read the Atlantic piece see what you think about the director who shall not be named.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there are picks here that seem very forward looking, but then there are picks that feel totally backwards.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my question then is some of these. You know, there has been this push in recent years to include more diversity, both you know, gender-wise, racially speaking, like just this push for the Academy. The Academy has been accused of being kind of out of touch for many, many years. And is this, do you think that these choices were deliberate? Like,
here's where I think
strange.
We see the new diverse Academy. I don't think we see it in Best Picture. I think that's just a weird, I think it was a weird year in terms of like what movies people latched onto for whatever reason. And that's been true since like the film festivals. I think where you see the new diverse Academy is if you look at Best Director and even more so Best Cinematography.
Mm.
There are three films not in the English language in Best Cinematography, which is, I think, a record for any non-foreign film category.
Okay. All right. Well, Should we just read those off, which I'm looking for them now?
Sure. So cinematography was Cold War, shot by Lukasz Zal. The Favorite, shot by Robbie Ryan, I think. I don't have these in front of me. I'm just going with the names sort of by memory. Never Look Away, which is...
Caleb Deschanel.
Caleb Deschanel. That's one of the non-English films, even though he is an American cinematographer.
Father of Zoe.
Yes, indeed. Mm. Roma, which was shot by the director Alfonso Cuarón, and A Star is Born, which was shot by Matthew Libatique.
Maddie.
All right, there you go.
I don't know him well enough to call him Maddie.
Sure.
But
he's my friend.
It does feel like that's what people say.
Okay, well, I mean, I have really, the mind reels, honestly. Like, I just, like... Tim, you alluded to this earlier, like, this seemed to be a pretty decent year for films, and yet, some of the worst Best Picture nominees that we've seen in a long time?
Three of my four least favorite Best Picture nominees of the 21st century were nominated this year.
Okay. Yeah, and they
What's the fourth? Yeah, give me Dish.
So the three are Vice, Green Book, and Bohemian Rhapsody. My least favorite nominee of the current century is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump to like what we at this table disagree on, because I think we can come up with some like more interesting takes than Bohemian Rhapsody is a piece of shit, which
JJ,
right?
You enjoy Green Book very much.
Right.
That is not true. Please scrub that from the record. No, keep it in and double it. No, I did not enjoy Green Book. I may have enjoyed Green Book more than some other films on this list, but no, I did not enjoy Green Book. I find it to be a morally bankrupt film.
Okay, yeah.
But when he goes gabagool, I go gabagool right back. And that big old pizza in bed.
The pizza in bed scene
is
both the best and the worst moment.
Oh my god, I need to do that so badly. Mm-hmm. Just curl up in bed, fold my entire large pizza in half, and take a big honking bite out of it.
But I mean, with that one, you can kind of see why some Academy voters might have gone for that.
I mean, some
right?
of the people like, who voted Driving Miss Daisy for Best Picture
sure,
are still
they're
Academy
still there.
Voters.
Yeah. it's just astounding to me what a retread this is, and just how it's dated for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So misguided, and Peter Farrelly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Best director snub, Peter Farrelly. Going solo this time.
Curious choice, you know.
Yeah.
Just everyone involved with this
Nick,
maybe
I don't
needed
know.
To take a step back.
I don't know how much you know about Nick Vallelonga.
Not a whole
screenwriter
lot.
Screenwriter and son of Tony Vallelonga.
Right.
But I've been looking at his IMDb page every night before I go to bed, just trying to figure out what is this? How did this happen?
Uh-huh.
He's a legend. It's a legendary Hollywood grift. Like, he has been making these sort of very low budget action films where a bunch of people die. And none of them are successful. And now pretty deep into his career, he writes himself into a movie. He's actually in the movie Green Book, and has convinced everyone that he is like a progressive person who cares about, well, convinced a part of the Oscar body. He's a progressive person who just wants us to be together.
Christ.
It's insane. It's insane. The movie about the making of Green Book will be a great
sure,
film. I will be happy when that is on the Best Picture list.
Yep. All right. Well, to perhaps something even more contentious.
Yes.
A Star is Born?
Oh my god.
I mean,
some people in this room don't care for it.
Yeah. Swoon.
Weird.
You know, I couldn't connect with it whatsoever. I've seen the story so many times. I don't think it's brought anything new to the story.
Wide angle lenses.
It did do a lot of wide angle close-ups for some
muffled
reason.
Sound.
I found it to be perfectly ordinary. So it's not even that I disliked it. I didn't see what about it was more worthy of attention than any one of 100 character dramas that come out of it every year.
I think this was the one where I'm typically not a person whose list is like surprising at the end of the year. I think if at the beginning of the year I set out which movies would probably be my favorite, they're on there.
Uh-huh.
This was really the movie that surprised me this year. I was not one of the people who was falling in love with the trailer. Mm-hmm. I thought the memes had came too early and that I was already out on the film and couldn't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And then the moment I sat down and I saw that first scene, mm-hmm. and I see Cooper absolutely shredding, mm-hmm. and I see these just strange turns that are so heightened with the lens flares and the wide angle lenses and all those different things, I was just like, oh, this is different than what I thought. I thought it was just, I thought I was going to have the same reaction you do. I'd be like, this is perfectly fine. I like Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, she's great. But instead, the whole time I was like, am I actually watching this? And I also, I mean, Tim, you teach editing.
I do.
So perhaps you disagree with this. I love the sort of push-pull nature of this film's like editing. It felt very stop and go in a way that I could easily see being distancing for other people. For me, I was like, this is just totally hooking me.
Yeah, fully. I like the micro level editing, actually. I'm not going to push back against that. I think the film's structure is very bad, like as a narrative.
Yeah.
It goes to hell in the second hour.
It does, yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I'm a huge fan of the second half.
Oh, wow, okay.
Well, the last third, I think, is really strong. The last 25 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
There is a part where ass genes happens, and maybe I'm not as on board.
Oh, I love the ass genes. What do you mean?
I need a drink.
That song is a bop. I think history will show. Every Gaga song in that movie is spectacular. But anyway, I guess I'm going to land somewhere in between. I know it made my top eight, but it's because the first act, I think the highs are so high.
As you've demonstrated, it is not as good a movie as Deadpool 2. So so I'm really not sure whose side you're on at all when we get down to that.
listen, okay, so
if
like
Cooper had been like, doesn't it feel like you're in a movie? You'd have been like, well, this is number six now.
I mean, frankly, they're both pretty self-conscious. As far as like self-aware narratives, I guess my top eight, it consisted, I would say, at least two. I would say Star is Born is very much aware of the history and this as kind of archetype and how can we mess with this archetype. And so I insofar as this movie is a movie about movies, I would say it is less insufferable than some of the other ones that have come out in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree that I think it really does fall apart in the second act. Speaking of falling apart,
the scene where she performs Shallow is it's genuinely great.
Yes.
Like it's absolutely mm-hmm. perfect.
Yes,
everything after that just feels very weirdly formed to me.
I would agree that it feels weirdly formed. I like it.
Fair enough.
Okay. I like the mess that sort of follows, or just like the pace. I know people have felt like it gets slow in the second half, but like so much happens.
Opposite.
Well, maybe they start falling off.
Yeah.
I like how fast it is and how quick it is too. Especially because, I mean, Cooper's whole thing is to just, I mean, the other films do it as well, but I mean, this is his statement on celebrity. And so much of it is not only the editing, the push pull, but the sound design too. Of like the moment I fell in love with the film was very early after that performance when he goes into the limo and the whole sound just like feels like you're underwater. And like you hear those faint cries and stuff like that, but that has to be so hard to be on stage, have all those people, you get off and it's gone. I mean, I feel like this after I'm done lecturing.
Sure.
I'm like, man, my adrenaline was there. 125 kids just in my pocket. They're loving it. All the jokes, the Babadook joke really hit. But then you get off and you're like, wait, what am I doing now? Wait, where do I go? Who do I see? I have to go home and be by myself. And I felt like it kept doing that. It just did it in a way that kept taking away more and more of those pleasures of the early part, and I was here for the pain.
Fair enough. I feel like at some point we will do a Star is Born episode on this show. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It obviously won't focus exclusively on the 2018 version.
You got four Stars is Born and also What Price Hollywood, which is basically Star is Born.
Right. So I think we'll put that on the docket for sure. But speaking of movies that fall off after the first act, The Favorite, make your guys' top eight.
I would like you to unpack your statement, madam.
Listen, all right, maybe it's the second act.
As soon as
Rachel Weisz falls off that horse, that movie falls apart.
Oh my gosh, no, because then right after that we have the grapefruit scene, or the pomegranate scene.
Sure, that was very funny.
That's good.
Yeah, that was funny. but it's dramatically inert.
No.
I am curious.
That is interesting. That's when the drama kicks in.
Yeah,
for me.
I concur with to me the first hour of that movie is like
fun.
Funny, bantery, isn't it amusing to watch these anachronistic like insults? And the second hour is like, oh shit. Like there's like real human stakes here.
Why do I feel so bad for these horrible people?
Right, exactly.
Oh, then why is she so horny and she has gout?
I know, right?
Well, it's Rachel Weisz is nearby, so.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
The cure for gout. Yeah. Or the cause of gout.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I don't even know how to disagree with you because I don't understand what
you're
saying.
You really don't think that movie, like, you don't have a problem with that movie's just, like, ending? Like, it just, I feel like.
I have a problem that. After it ends, I have to go watch other movies that have imperfect endings.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I guess.
I love, like, the ending. Like, I love, like, well, all the bunny, like, the dissolves.
But at that point, like, who cares? I guess that was my problem. I guess, yeah, there you go. Yeah. You guys cared. I did not. I was just like, these people are terrible. To the extent that I feel like we're spoiling this, which we shouldn't.
We can avoid. We haven't spoiled it yet. I said bunnies are in the end.
Yeah. But I just felt like the movie is asking us to care about horrible people, which fair enough. But I just felt like it kind of pulled its punches at the end. I didn't care about anything or anyone. And to the extent that, there ever was any real competition for the queen's affection, it is handily won, like, almost immediately by one of the characters. And it's never, there's never really any, like, push-pull on that. It's just like, oh, she won, okay.
See, to me, what's interesting about the ending is that they have found a way to set up a love triangle in which the resolution makes everyone unhappy. So I say there is no winner. Like, that's how I read that movie.
Okay.
And, like, I feel bad for all three characters, even the one who is objectively the most, like, morally atrocious. Because, like, they did all lose. Like, they played this game and they fucked it up and now they're very sad.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's hard to talk about this without spoiling it.
Yeah.
But I feel the same way, too. And I found the way they ended up in their spots interesting, too. Like, I don't think it... Like, okay... The favorite, the person who becomes the favorite, I think that's told pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is a little bit of push and pull. There are the mustaches in the bathtub and things like that. But just where everybody ended up, like from sort of like disfigurement of face and leg to sort of unhappiness with comfort that's reached or banishment of sorts.
You're trying real
things
hard.
Like
I admire your attempt.
Things like that. All of them felt like, yeah, they're in. I mean, even the person who gets what they want is bored with having gotten what they want, mm-hmm. and sort of irrevocably changed by the experience it took to get what they want.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess your mileage may vary on this one.
Are you fans of all three of the actresses? I feel like that's part of it.
Yeah, we'll get to that, but I definitely thought Coleman and Weisz were really great.
They're great. So is Stone.
Yeah, she's
Emma Stonehive.
I would rank Stone third among them, but I do love all three performances.
Where do you put Horatio the Duck?
Horatio the Duck is clearly the best thing that happens.
There we go. Quack, quack.
Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else we want to say about the Best Picture nominees?
I kind of want to pick a fight over Roma, but
okay.
I feel like after The Favorite, I think it'll just be a bummer.
Can I say something even sadder for me personally? Spike Lee is a foundational filmmaker for me. I think even his misunderstood films are misunderstood. Mm-hmm. There's something interesting in almost every single film he's made. So now this one, which is like maybe the most white friendly film he's ever made.
Well, that is definitely not true.
Well, what's more white friendly?
25th Hour, Inside Man.
Okay, that's probably
right off the top of my head.
I don't know about Inside Man. Specific type of white, maybe, is what I would say.
Okay.
Like this one, I mean, it just feels so. I said it kind of jokingly before, but it feels of a piece with something like Green Book to me in terms of its racial politics being so obvious and like rubbed down to just the essential sort of thing. Like there are some white people who are bad and there are some white people who are good, and black people got to deal with it. And Spike Lee has made so many films that say like such messier things about this issue that for his first film to be nominated for Best Picture and his first Best Directing gig or a nomination to come from this film, it feels sad. I'm happy for him. He deserves it. He is one of the most interesting, just not only filmmakers, but film thinkers and film teachers we've ever had. But for it to be this one, I don't know, it feels weird. Like even just looking at it on the page right now, there's just something about it that makes me unhappy.
Mm. I mean, I was very, very pro Black Klansman. I hear what you're saying, although I think to a certain extent, I think you're giving too much credit to some of his stuff in the middle of his career, and he's not a young man anymore. I think that's the thing.
He is old, for sure.
He's a 60-something-year-old man, so like there is a lack of rage. Like, Do the Right Thing is an enraged movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anyone can be enraged for 30 years without burning out. And I think that's kind of, he has become a little bit more sedate in what he's going for. I think you're selling it short in a few ways, though. I think the scene that I know you particularly dislike, I think it's one of the best scenes in the film, where they are listening to, I forget the name of the activist, but there's an activist talking about like Black
Beauty. Stokely Carmichael.
Right, thank you.
Yep.
And the shots of faces listening to him, I think is very beautifully done. And I think it does speak to like an experience that is antithetical to what white viewers would like have access to. And I think like that scene in particular does feel to me like it really is not for white people.
Hmm. That could be. I mean, again, there it is. I don't know. That, I mean, the problem I had with that was less so it's sort of like white gaze friendliness and more so it's like, Spike is someone who can tend to be too indebted to his influences.
Sure.
And that's one of those where, again, it feels like smart on paper or yes, this is a studied sort of approach to use this aesthetic. And then in the film, I'm like, I get what you're doing. The same thing happens when like the sort of blaxploitation posters pop up. And that's where I would say it's directed by an old man. And it also feels.
Sure. Yeah. The blaxploitation like posters to me, that is an example of like Spike Lee having an idea.
That's done much worse than the scene you're talking about. But I think they're both from the same impulse.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah. But anyway, Spike, I love you. I'm so happy that you're being recognized for something. And the only film that's been nominated by like every major awards body in the categories.
Yeah. By stats, Black Klansman and Vice are the only two films that can actually win.
Yeah. And those are our two favorite filmmakers.
Wow.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So let me put it this way. If your choice is Vice or Black Klansman, surely you'll agree that Black Klansman is the good.
I mean, now I'm realizing saying that they actually have both been influential in my life.
Sure, yeah. So, Step Brothers, baby.
Step Brothers is one of the 25 best films of the century.
Okay, well, do we want to take a moment to shit on Vice, or have we said enough?
I don't even want to talk about that.
No. Okay, yeah. All right, that's enough of that. Let's move on to the acting nominees, and also let's talk about our own personal favorites. Best actor in a leading role in 2018. Let's start with our personal favorites. Tim, you got a personal?
My personal favorite. So best actor.
Best actor.
Clearly Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke. So yes. Here. JJ.
Pulling up my list.
Okay. Okay. Mine is Ethan Hawke. First Reformed.
Oh yeah. Yeah. First Reformed. I guess there have been other Ethan Hawke performances.
Yeah.
Or have there?
Ever. Maybe.
This is my point.
No, actually, he's been good for a really long time.
No, I love Ethan Hawke, but he's up to something in First Reformed that is just next level. Like it's a very like 60s European performance, so it is kind of you can see what he's deriving it from, but I think it works really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing use of just kind of not talking throughout that film.
Right.
I feel like you guys are nominating him for the wrong thing
this
year. I would nominate him for the First Reformed press tour, which has been incredible the entire time. That's the reason I'm sad he was snubbed. Yeah. I want to hear more. What do you think about superhero movies, Ethan Hawke? Why do you hate him so much? Please keep enraging the world and making me happy.
The children.
My favorite performance this year was honestly Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born.
Okay.
There's something about, I mean, again, I think it is a level of surprise for me with that performance in particular. But there's something that just feels so lived in about that. And it's not only his leathery face and his greasy hair, which this is one of the all-time sort of great matches of grease with hotness in a performance.
That's like, the top five. That's so greasy.
Yeah, he is so greasy and still so hot. Like, how dirty can you be? Like, you know how bad he smells. You know it's horrible.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
I feel you might be telling us more about yourself than about the movie in this
one. Yeah, this could be.
Yeah.
Because all I can think about is, he pissed himself. No, I'm done.
Oh, man.
I would not tap that.
All right, maybe at that point it goes away a little bit. But the initial thing is there. And I just felt like, honestly, parts of the film that sag in the latter half, I don't think it's all perfect throughout. But I think the parts that sag are often when he leaves the frame.
Interesting.
Which isn't to say Gaga's bad. She's amazing. But I think she's at her best when it's the two of them together.
Mm.
Like, there are so many films these days, to pick one, Ocean's 8, that feel cast by Tumblr or something, or maybe old Tumblr when they used to have like sexual content.
Yeah.
Where it's like, here are a bunch of stars you like, but there's been no thought about like, how do these people actually function together? And this is one of those where it felt like, oh, these two people just work together, even though it feels like it was cast by Tumblr. It stars Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Mm-hmm. And I was in the whole time. The voice is fun to do.
It sure is. Yep. Hmm. Yep.
And the emotional payoff really hit for me.
Yeah. All yeah. Right. I mean, you know, I dressed as Bradley Cooper for Halloween, so obviously I didn't hate it too much.
Can you give us the voice?
Maybe at the end. Remind me again. I gotta work my way up to it. I gotta get sufficiently hoarse, you know.
I should have never offered you tea.
Oh, man. I gotta do more of those painkillers we talked about earlier. But anyway.
Actually, the film tells you you shouldn't. It's bad. Please avoid them.
Okay, well, so how many of our favorites made the best actor in a leading role category?
Let's see. Tom Cruise is not on here.
Weird.
Yeah. I will say actor in a leading role to me is the weak acting category this year. Weirdly, the only one who I look at that performance, I'm like, yeah, I'm on board with what you did there, is Willem Dafoe in At Eternity's Gate, which is clearly like the fifth place throwaway nomination.
Where he plays someone who died.
He played someone who died.
30 years younger before, than he is right now.
Yes, that's correct. Even granting that, it's still like a good performance.
We all love Willem Dafoe.
He's good.
Milwaukee native. So.
Is he then? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My mom used to serve him dinner at the country club.
Wow. All right.
Yep.
Lovely.
Makes me sound posh. Remember, she was working at the country club. actor in a leading role and actor in a supporting role both have the same problem for me, which is that four of the five nominees are playing real life humans, which is so incredibly boring to me.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
It is maybe the most backwards looking part of, I mean, beyond the racial problems and monster abuse problems, it is the most backwards thing for me where you have people doing impressions effectively.
And I do think that we need to at least slightly nuance that, because like, if you look at the actress categories, mm-hmm. the three women from The Favorite are all playing quote unquote real life people, but like that's not
But it's a different thing than Freddie Mercury or Vincent Van Gogh. Yeah. And then the only original ones we have are Cooper and Sam Elliott. And Cooper, you could argue, is playing Sam Elliott. So it kind of is another person playing a real life person.
Sure.
Or Eddie Vedder, whoever you want to pick, whoever he studied with beforehand.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Richard E. Grant, you know, yes, he's playing
right.
a real life yeah. person, but I don't get the sense that he's doing
it's not impression. An icon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
And
also Adam Driver is playing a composite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I...
Sam Rockwell's playing a Will Ferrell.
Sam Rockwell's playing an SNL character, yes. Agreed.
Oh, God. It's just it's so weirdly paint by numbers. It's all predictable, right? Like, Christian Bale puts on a lot of makeup and he gets a Best Actor nomination.
And
like,
probably a win at this point.
God.
Him or Rami Malek, who do you pick your poison? At least we get to hear that accent if Christian Bale wins.
That's true. All right, well, that's depressing. Ethan Hawke, they couldn't even nominate him. Like, he put on that charm offensive.
He really did.
Yeah, they got really pissed. Wanted it.
They cannot nominate him the year Black Panther got a nomination for Best Picture, where they decided superhero movies exist. That's not it. That is more damaging to your campaign than Paul Schrader saying he wants to work with Kevin Spacey, apparently. So... Because Paul Schrader is nominated and Hawke is not.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Well, best actress in a leading role. Your favorite? Possibly including someone from The Favorite, maybe?
I mean, this to me is like in the year of cinema, the most well-stocked category. Mm-hmm. I also think it's the best category at the Oscars for the acting.
Yeah,
it is great.
Crazy hard for me to pick my favorite. So I'm just going to go on brand a little bit and say that my favorite performance by an actress in a leading roles is Tilda Swinton from Suspiria.
Okay. Wow.
Oh.
Interesting twist.
Wow.
Interesting. I know. JJ. Wow. Also Tilda?
A twist befit of glass. No. my favorite, I'm going to say two because I think they both convey different sides of romance in ways that I found utterly convincing. So Kiki Layne from If Beale Street Could Talk, mm-hmm. and then Juliette Binoche from Let the Sunshine In,
okay.
which is not necessarily my favorite Juliette Binoche performance. There are too many to list.
Right.
She is probably the greatest actress of her generation, in my opinion. But there's something about this film, again, thinking of push-pull, I guess that's what I was attracted to this year, in terms of just her dealing with all of these shitty French men.
Mm-hmm.
Boofing her way out, mm-hmm. and then go mm-hmm. into another one. And just, it's a tired performance, which yeah. is not the kind of performance you see in an Oscar acting category that I was so in tune with her sort of exhaustion. And then once the final credit scene kicks into gear, I was just fully convinced, like, yeah, I can't believe this is happening to you again.
Yeah.
And Kiki Layne is just radiant throughout the film. For her first real screen performance that's reached a major audience, just a real revelation, I thought, and good at more than just the sort of innocence or naivete or sort of like her realization of how hard the world is outside of her. She's also extremely funny in the film and does some really, really, really strong work with her eyes in particular, looking up. That's what her performance was defined by.
Interesting. Okay.
That feels right, like attractive.
Okay. Well, I gotta say this, as you both have mentioned, this actress in a leading role category is pretty strong. And
it's good.
You could give it to any of them. I have not seen The Wife.
No one's seen The Wife.
Yeah.
Besides people flying on the airplanes and Tim.
Sure. but
she is very good at... So The Wife is a terrible movie. Like, it is not good. Ignore the people telling you it's good. It is good in part because she does so much heavy lifting to create an interior life in a character that has not been written with one.
Mm.
Okay. You know, I loved Olivia Colman in The Favorite. I thought she was amazing. I don't
is
know.
Is she a lead?
That's my question.
I think all three of them are leads.
I think she's the third lead.
I think that's why the movie...
That's probably true.
I think that's part of the reason I didn't like the movie, because there wasn't the movie wasn't clear on who we were supposed to
not
be.
Not enough yeah. gout. Did Deadpool have gout in Deadpool 2? Is that why
was there gout? It wouldn't surprise me. It had a little bit of everything, you know?
that's how you get gout. You have a little bit of everything.
That's true.
a little bit too much of everything.
But, you know, like... Melissa McCarthy, wonderful. But I have to say the performance that surprised me the most was Lady Gaga's. So
Stephanie.
I guess I would give it to, yeah, good old Stephanie Germanotta. Yeah, I don't know. I'm as surprised as anyone. But special shout out to Rachel Weisz and the Rachels, both yeah. Rachels really in Disobedience,
oh, yeah.
who were in a terrible movie. But much like Glenn Close, I'd imagine,
yeah.
really, really elevated the
yeah,
material.
Yeah, no, like, insofar as Disobedience is tolerable, it is because the Rachels are excellent together. I like Weisz in The Favorite more than in Disobedience, but I think body of work this year, she did an extraordinarily good job.
Yeah, yeah. Good year for Rachel Weisz.
On board.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Another wonderful press tour, if you have not been following it. It's amazing. Oh my God. It's great. Essentially, just she keeps talking about how bored she is with men, women, heterosexual coupling, and then just, I don't know, helping a lot of young children, like young people realize what it is they're feeling inside their bodies.
Okay.
I can relate, frankly. Anyway, okay. Best actor in a supporting role. I think we kind of touched on this, but what's your favorite?
Of the year or of the nominees?
Of the year.
Of the year. This one was not such a great category, so it's a little bit
yeah.
harder to feel super, super enthusiastic.
Oh, I love my five.
I I was really, really impressed. And I think that neither one of you were terribly keen on the movie Widows, but I liked it a lot.
I liked Widows a lot. It was my 10.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
I loved Widows.
I thought Daniel Kaluuya in that movie mm-hmm. was a really amazing performance of like a complete psychopath, but not a movie psychopath. Like mm-hmm. I actually was scared of him in that film.
Hmm. Yeah. The wheelchair scene.
Yeah.
Is something where my wife was covering her eyes throughout. Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's mm-hmm. terrifying.
Yeah. I didn't like much about that movie, but
oh, I yeah. loved almost go. Every part of it.
There you go. All right.
Justice for Widows. Hey.
JJ, how about you?
I'm going to pull someone else from the Widows cast, but not from that film or from Spider-Verse.
So it's not going to be Robert Duvall from Widows? No,
Robert Duvall. Oh my God. Can we just, I need this on mic so people acknowledge this. There is a part of Widows Robert Duvall says to his son, Colin Farrell, he's mad at him and he says, I'll wipe your ass. And I don't know what it means and I don't know what it is. So please write in to flixwise@flixwise.com and let me know what, is that a bad thing? It's a lot. I don't know what it is.
Are you taking solicitations for people to wipe your ass?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm just like, is that something like your parent, like your okay. dad would say to you? Like, honestly, like, hey, if you keep misbehaving, I will wipe your ass. Like, I don't know. Is that what's bad? But no, mine is Brian Tyree Henry from If Beale Street Could Talk, sure. who has a single sequence. It's about 7 to 12 minutes of the film. It's really short, but covers every single emotion you could possibly express in that time. I think he is, like, I can't wait to see where that guy's career goes.
He had even a though in the good past, 2018. Yeah,
in the past year alone, he is... had more good performances than yeah. a lot of actors have in their entire filmographies. So yes, part of it is goodwill from playing Alfred on Atlanta, my favorite TV character ever, I think. But in this film, yeah, he is funny. He delivers terrible puns. He laughs. He's radiant as well. And then there is just like the weight of his oppression, but maybe like everyone's oppression just filtering in, and this sense of dread of like knowing, especially what's coming to the Stephon James character as he hears these things. It's one of those things where I loved when he was down and felt that, but also just something as simple as a line where he says something so generic too that like men say all the time about other people's like other couples, like, you got a good one, man. But he delivers it in this way that is the perfect mix of like, it conveys to Kiki Lane's character what that should, but also conveys so much more about his current situation and what he doesn't have and what he doesn't feel like he will be able to have. Mm. So yeah, all the way in on Brian Tyree Henry.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't really have an answer for this one.
Do you want to give the rest of my list?
I mean,
Jake Johnson, Spider-Verse.
Okay, all right. Sure.
Nicholas Holt, The Favorite.
Sure.
Nicholas Holt, The Favorite, is not getting the attention he deserves, given so the attention that movie's getting.
He's so good.
I'm making a face. Anyway.
Oh, he's so good.
Whatever.
He's making a face, too, the whole movie.
Yes, he is, yeah.
A lot of faces.
yeah, I thought Richard E. Grant was great, although that movie, I need to rewatch it.
It's a cute, fine movie.
Yeah. I thought Adam Driver was really good in Black Klansman.
He is. I mean, he's great.
Yeah,
I think he gives much the best everything. Performance.
Yeah, yeah. And he does. Yeah, he does. As uncomfortable as it is to say, he does.
Yeah, I don't like. Yeah, I don't. Ugh.
He's really good. I mean, he has worked with the right people and continues to.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
Smart guy, I guess.
Smart guy.
Sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. Just special shout out to John Cena and Blockers. That,
all right.
That performance gave me a lot of joy.
I think that this brings us back to the Favorite-esque, is it supporting? Because
he
dominates my feelings about that film.
I see.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Who knew I would take the populist role here? Like, I didn't see that coming, frankly.
A twist worthy of Deadpool himself.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, you do have an entire cast full of Deadpool. You have the kid from Wilder People.
Yes.
Who is actually, he's quite good in Deadpool,
and he's very charming. Yes, and speaking of Atlanta, what's her name? Domino, is it, from Deadpool?
Zazie Beetz.
Yeah, she's great.
Yep.
Oh, there's so many winning performances in that. Josh Brolin had a great year playing, I don't know.
Playing comic book villains.
Comic book dudes, yeah. Yep. So,
it's a good year for Josh Brolin to be in movies that I wish didn't get made.
Oh, but that chin, though. Ooh, baby, that chin.
Yeah.
Thanos. Dan, yes.
damn it.
All right. All right. Okay, before we get too completely off the rails, best actress in a supporting role. Favorite, your personal favorite? So, JJ, or do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, this is one where, I think the category as written here, I like all five of the people. And I like most of the performances as well. I don't know if I want to call Emma Stone or Rachel Weisz, who are both amazing, my favorite supporting performance, just because they do feel like leads. I would say of the people not on this list, to bring it back to Widows, Elizabeth Debicki is my favorite performance in that film. Mm-hmm. A woman who is taller than four giraffes combined, and has the real arc of that film, and is convincing in every part. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, again, the scene where they get the guns, I'm like, this doesn't look like it fits. And when it arrives in the film, it is just loaded with so much backstory, from her in particular, that, I thought she was like my find this year. I was like, this person. And again, I don't understand why. I mean, maybe it's because that movie was advertised like through a paper bag. The poster was literally like, we put a paper bag filter over the 10 people in this film. I thought she was the best part of that film. And
that and the dog.
The dog's great too. Yeah. It was a strong year for dogs.
It's a good dog year.
That dog's great. Cooper's dog. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Mm-hmm. They had a whole aisle of dogs at one
point. That's true.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
So I'm going to concur that I think, supporting actress was really strong across the board. The one that I would pick as my favorite, largely for kind of the same reasons that you picked Debicki, JJ, and that it was an actress that I don't know anything about, and she just sort of really took me completely by surprise when I saw this film. My favorite was Raffi Cassidy in Vox Lux, which is sort of the Star is Born for people like me.
Okay.
In that it is the story of, you know, this woman's rise to pop stardom and then the discovery that rising to pop stardom has left her completely destroyed inside as a human. And she's very just like broken and bitter. And Raffi Cassidy plays the teenage version of this pop star who will then grow up as the film proceeds to be played by Natalie Portman, who is also very, very good. Like, I think Portman I like as an actress. I know a lot of people can't stand her, but no, there's this really very well executed arc through the first half of Vox Lux. That's just watching this character dealing with a very hostile and unforgiving world sort of by continually turning ever more inwards. And like, she starts the film this very like optimistic, hopeful person who thinks that she can really change the world with the music. As the hour that Raffi Cassidy is in the main role proceeds, we just see her sort of break more and more and more. And just watching this actress that I've never heard of, and she certainly reads as a teenager, I think she's actually in her 20s, but like seeing this very young looking person navigate all of these really deep, complicated nihilistic emotions was just really tremendously impressive to me. Definitely a film that I think went way too far under everybody's radar. I really, really was taken with Vox Lux.
Okay.
As a whole.
Yeah, I think you're the only person I've heard say that, but all right. Someone's gotta stand for it, you know, like Every movie's got their champions. I need to see it. As I give you my top five, whatever, my favorites, like understand that there are so many great films that I completely either ignored or missed.
Or that just weren't as good as Deadpool.
Or that, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a high bar,
frankly. This
is
what you should do. Every movie that you think is better than Deadpool, to know that Pauline thinks it's better.
Yeah, yeah.
Right in to flixwise@flixwise.com.
Yep, yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Again, very strong category. Didn't see Vice.
That would not.
That's okay.
I think,
yeah, I don't think that's.
I think Amy Adams is a gifted actress. I think she is not very good in Vice.
Sure, sure. Didn't see if Beale Street could talk either. So that's the one that
She's lying. She thought Deadpool 2 was better.
Maybe, bro. I mean, that's quite likely. I mean, I'm surprised.
It's quite likely. Pauline is canceled.
Oh, gracious.
I've got to say, out of a very outstanding ensemble cast, that Regina King is the one that everybody agreed was the best. It seems weird to me.
It is strange, although the second time I saw it, I found her stretch in Puerto Rico to be extremely moving. Okay. The first time I thought it was, I was like, I want to go back to the people we've been spending our time with, and then found that to be that. There's some really strong cursing, especially in that scene from her.
Sure.
Desperation. But yeah, it is again, much like I think in the case of Moonlight with Naomi Harris, it seems like they pick the most Oscar obvious role as opposed to maybe the best performance.
Sure.
But in this case, it's Regina King and she's a legend. So
yeah. I would really like to see her win an Academy Award, but it doesn't need to be this movie. But if, you know.
Yeah, like they give her an Academy Award for the Boondocks somehow.
Yeah.
Be cool.
All right. Well, yeah. I don't have a really great answer for this. Rachel Weisz, why not?
I mean, she's Rachel Weisz.
Sure. Okay. So we are kind of running short on time. So just really quickly, are there any other awards that you would like to highlight? Any other categories that you think?
Film editing, really they nailed it.
Yeah.
Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, Vice. Those are all wonderfully
impressive.
Edited films.
Yeah.
I do think that the editing in Black Klansman is kind of terrific. I like
that. Is definitely better than the other three movies that I said. I would just point to two quickly. I think original score, despite leaving off Justin Hurwitz's First Man score, which I didn't really respond to that film. I thought the theremin score was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I like all of these scores. I mean, Mary Poppins Returns is a very obvious sort of pick that I don't care much about, but it's fine.
I feel like if you're going to disqualify categories for having one bad nomination,
we'll
just never come up with a good one.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, Klansman is another sort of career award. I think the Black Panther score has some moments where it just becomes another Marvel score, but also some moments that...
That's the thing. It's the first Marvel movie that isn't entirely made out of those moments.
Exactly.
The parts that are good are so good.
If you haven't, there's a Song Exploder episode with Ludwig Göransson, the composer, breaking down the Killmonger theme that is outstanding. It's amazing. The Isle of Dogs score is amazing. It is one of my favorite how do you say his name?
Desplechin.
Yeah, I nailed that. Speaking of cultural appropriation, Isle of Dogs. That score is really powerful. All of the Tycho drum tracks are amazing. And then the If Beale Street Could Talk score is, I would say, that thing that people say on podcasts like this, where it's one of my favorite scores in years, but like Phantom Thread happened last year.
Yeah.
It is just below the Phantom Thread score.
Okay.
And if you ever look at my sort of Apple Music plays, you would know that's pretty high praise.
Okay.
Yeah, the category that I think really got super close to actually being terrific. Now, I should say I haven't seen all of the foreign film nominations, and I've heard very good things about the slate from people who have. But of the ones that I have seen, all five nominees, documentary feature, which is typically like such a throwaway of like talking heads about important issues. And there's one of those, like RBJ, I think, RBG is not...
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes. RBG is not a good movie. It just isn't.
No.
But the other four, I mean, Free Solo has issues, but the footage is amazing. And then those last three, Hell County, This Morning, This Evening, Minding the Gap, and A Fathers and Sons, are all such, like, they're challenging, like, aesthetically, structurally, thematically. They're just difficult films, and I really, really admire all three of them for like getting this kind of platform. Cause typically, I mean, it could have been the fucking Mr. Rogers film.
It could have been Three Identical Strangers.
It could have been Three Identical Strangers.
Yeah. Which I think maybe one of my least favorite films of the year.
Yeah.
It's really so bad.
Yeah.
And like
one of my least favorite CNN TV shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No. And the fact that they resisted that urge and went for this like actually like compelling list of nuanced, complicated movies, I just think is amazing.
This just asserts that people who make documentaries are smarter than the people who make fiction films.
Yes.
Because they've chose such a nice slate.
Yeah.
Just a real quick, another shout out to Minding the Gap, which feels like justice for Steve James's snub with Hoop Dreams.
A little bit.
Not only did he serve as an executive producer, but I think this is a project that you can see why he was attracted to it. Mm-hmm. Composed of just an overwhelming amount of footage from a really long span of time. I have no idea what the director Bing Liu does next, because this is, it's a very personal film for him, but also one that it feels like he's been making for over a decade. But whatever it is, I'm excited to see, because there's maybe not a single more energizing film I saw this year than Minding the Gap.
Yeah, I quite like that. Okay, is there a movie we all agree on? Just real quick. Like, we all like Minding the Gap.
Anywhere? Yeah, Minding the Gap, I think.
Yeah.
I think we're all on board. Okay.
What did you think about Spider-Man?
I didn't see it.
Okay, well, then we'll assume that you'll love it.
Okay, great.
And we agree on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, it is meta and a superhero.
I like that.
I do. Let me put it this way. If you watched Spider-Verse and walked out of it saying, well, I liked it, but it wasn't as good as Deadpool 2... those are two very easy films to compare head to head. It's not like saying you like Deadpool 2 better than, you know, Zama. Sure.
Listen, I'm like, okay, so Deadpool 2, I mean,
I'm just saying, it's like Zama and Deadpool.
House will never speak to
Zama
me.
Zama and Deadpool are like, you've already gone on the record.
Yeah, it's been multiple times.
Like, I'm just saying, Deadpool and Zama are like comparing a Volkswagen and a steak dinner.
Right.
Spider-Man and Deadpool are very similar movies. So if you see Spider-Man and you don't like it better than Deadpool, I think you need to look in the mirror.
Reevaluate my life choices. Sure,
yeah, there's
sure.
A lot going on there.
To be fair, okay, so the movie begins with...
Are we talking Deadpool 2 right
Deadpool
now?
Okay, 2, no, we're yeah. done. The movie we need to begins.
This is
with
my podcast now. Deadpool 2 will not be mentioned anymore. Welcome to FlixWise. My name is JJ Burst, Mr. Lady J.
Lord J. Okay. Well, anyway, if you want to talk about Deadpool, you can.
I don't. What I just said.
I know. All right. Later. We'll save it for later. Okay. But back to our. Anything we agree on.
We all agree that Green Book is bad.
Green Book is bad. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think maybe the bad movies have been more galvanizing this year than the good ones.
That's
There's been a lot of disagreement. You know, like something that really spoke to me, like Roma, I thought was great, partially because I went in thinking I would hate it, and ended up really liking it. So
I went in expecting to love Roma, and I loved Roma.
Okay.
Were you a fan of Buster Scruggs, Tim?
I was a fan of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Buster
okay,
Scruggs.
Okay, we're all bored for Buster
there we go.
Scruggs.
That's
okay, which got absolutely no Academy love, which is
on the contrary, it got substantially more than I thought it would.
Oh,
it got 3 nominations. I thought maybe one was a possibility.
Wow,
the original song, but
yeah,
Tim Blake Nelson is not allowed to perform it.
That's why is that?
Because
they're just doing the Kendrick Lamar song and Shallow.
Oh, really?
Which is deranged because
why
they're cutting out all of the categories. Presumably to make space for this kind of thing. So, like, what are the Oscars even going to consist of this year?
I don't know. Yeah. If anything, I'm, like, happy that Tom York was not nominated for Suspirium because I didn't want him to have to get cut out. Like, so, whatever. It's okay.
Bizarre.
But that song is great.
Yes.
Oh, Knox.
All right. Well, okay. So, maybe Buster Scruggs, the thing that's bringing us all together, and let us never speak of Deadpool 2 again. But quickly, real quickly, before we sign off, just what are your favorite moments in movies this year? Individual moments.
When Olivia Colman delivers several lines, but the chief among them being, I like it when she puts her tongue in me.
Yeah.
It's a pretty great moment. I've already mentioned the sort of Brian Tyree Henry scene in Beale Street. That is just, it's a work of art in itself. I'm trying to think. Here's one. Ooh, should I do it? I'll go on the record. The preparation of the poisonous bento box in Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs.
Okay.
It's the best part of the score. It's the most visually interesting. It's a really powerful moment, I think, of like, kind of stating what drew Wes Anderson to the project, I think, like an appreciation for that level of like my new craft. Mm-hmm. And it's just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. Well, I'm going to say Shallow.
It's a good scene.
Yeah. Oof. So good. Also, well, since I'm playing this populist role, Mamma Mia 2 had a moment where Colin Firth.
Keep talking.
Danced
Keep talking.
On the bow of a ship. And it's about as like majestic a shot as I have ever seen. Like it was a thing to behold. We'll just say that. And also when Cher starts singing Fernando, these are both good.
All right, one more sequence I want to point to the entirety of Mission Impossible.
Okay, sure.
Yes.
which is just Yep, in particular, the bathroom scene for me, but...
In particular, the helicopter scene for me.
The helicopter scene's amazing,
That helicopter
too.
Scene.
Learn how to drive a helicopter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's so
mm-hmm,
cool.
Mm-hmm.
What a good guy.
Yeah.
Good human being.
Oh, and...
One of our finest.
The dancing scene in The Favorite.
That is fun.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. That was good.
When Horatio, the duck's just hanging out and quacking in The Favorite.
Yeah.
I'll go with that, too.
Yeah. And a movie that I don't know if this counts as a 2018 release, because I'm not sure if it got released, but Nonfiction, the
I think it's going to be a 19.
I don't think that's come out yet.
Okay, yeah. There's a scene in there that ranks among the best.
Cool.
It's Juliette Binoche being amazing.
I like him.
I think you guys will like it.
I'm on board.
And that's the way we frame it. Flicks-wise, that is. Listeners, do you have strong feelings about this year's Oscar selection? Come let us know on our website, flickswise.com, or you can leave us a message on our Facebook page, facebook.com/flickswise. And if you're up for trading Rachel Weisz memes, you should probably come follow me on Twitter. The handle is @flickswise, or if you want to talk Deadpool too. All right, now that we've officially put 2018 behind us, we can look forward to many more looks back into cinema history. I believe my co-producer Martin's got Solo queued up, as well as A Brighter Summer Day, and a smattering of other non-sight and sound entries.
Can I just say something real quick?
Sure.
Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Right? Christ. All right. And there's also been talk around these parts of a Devil Wears Prada, Flickswise Favorites episode. We'll see if that comes to pass. But until then... okay, JJ.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem, anytime.
And if folks want to follow you on the internet, where should they look?
I'm on Twitter at JJBRSCH, or you can just find my name. I took a letter out for some reason.
Weird.
And then list my full name
okay.
as my display. and honestly, this is a desperate plea. Follow me on Apple Music. I'm making great playlists every other week. I'm really doing a real service for everybody out there, and... yeah, you'll appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Apple Music. That's a new one. I don't think we've had one of those.
Also, I'm on
yet.
Spotify as well.
Okay.
But yeah, I use Apple Music.
Okay.
It looks better. Spotify is so ugly.
It is true. That's fair. All right, Tim. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me back.
And
pleasure.
If listeners enjoyed the sound of your voice, is there another place they can...
There is another podcast
yeah.
That I am a regular part of. That's Alternate Ending Podcast. So the website is Alternate Ending. Two E's in the middle there, but one word, .com. I'm also on Letterboxd, just under my name, Tim Brayton, B-R-A-Y-T-O-N. So yeah, there's reviews and podcasts. So yeah, come by.
Right. Wonderful. All right, listeners, subscribe, tune in. And while you're at it, subscribe, rate, like our show too. Okay, so just real quickly, best picture, what's going to take it? Tim?
You know, everything about Logic says Roma, but it's nominated for Best Foreign Film, and I don't think it's going to win both.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be Green Book.
Ah! JJ.
Hmm. So I think it's Roma.
Okay.
But I don't want to say that. I want to come out with a pick to surprise people. I think because of the screwy way the balloting works, that Black Panther is going to be in the top 3 or 4 of a lot of people's lists
uh-huh.
and not at the bottom of many people's lists. Uh-huh. I think people are okay with that. The goodwill's there. I'm going Black Panther
all
wins.
All right. Okay.
And I said Get Out last year, and I'm going to keep doing this until a movie wins.
Okay.
All right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Ugh.
I want to push back against calling Black Panther interesting.
Yeah.
By the way.
Thank you.
Killmonger.
I'm taking enough crap on this episode.
It is, right. I will say, it's no Deadpool 2.
Right.
But, yeah.
If I had to rank the comic book movies of 2018, that would be one of the points where I had to think about it for a while.
Wow, really?
I enjoyed Deadpool 2, and I didn't enjoy Black Panther.
Yeah.
Oh, but the museum scene's so good.
Let us never speak of this. It is not. It's really bad.
It is really good.
It's a really bad scene.
It would have been
no curator would bring coffee into an exhibit.
But what if the curator turned and was like, "Isn't this weird? Is it a movie?" Then you would love it. Or do you need more?
All right. Good night, everyone.
Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore? I'm falling. In all the good times, I find myself longing for a change. And in the bad times, I fear myself.
Yeah.